The Lord is bringing you into a land of plenty, where nothing is lacking. You'll be full and prosperous, with fine homes, abundance, influence, options, ever-increasing finances. This sounds like the good life, right? But it's here that Moses tells them, be careful, to beware that in their plenty, they don't forget the Lord. Moses never says that having plenty is bad. He just tells them that it makes remembering harder. That when you have more than enough, your attention might be diverted from the source of your abundance to the abundance itself. There's an English word for this that wasn't around when Moses wrote this sermon. It's the word amusement. To be amused is for our attention to be pleasantly diverted. It's a distraction. The old French meaning was to fool or entrap someone with their own thoughts, literally to cause them to muse as a distraction. Moses could have said, beware that in your plenty, you're not amused, causing you to forget the Lord your God. Don't let your abundance fool you into thinking you've achieved this wealth on your own. Now, Marian may not be the promised land, but I don't think it's reaching too far to say we live in a time of plenty. We have access to everything, whether it's possessions, information, entertainment. We can buy things we don't even have money for. And every second of the day, more and more stuff is produced. There's always more to see, more to read, more to experience, more to own, always more of everything. There's plenty. So be careful. Beware that in your plenty, you don't forget the Lord your God, which I'm assuming if you're here, you're actively trying to remember the Lord. But I'm not sure that Israel would have said that they were actively trying to forget the Lord. It just kind of happened. They started mingling with other nations. They started taking their advice. They started living with them, being amused by them. Psalm 1 captures this movement so well. If I could do a mini scripture presentation of this text, I think I'd do something like, oh, the good life of those who do not walk in the ways of the wicked, or who stand with sinners, or who sit in the seats of mockers. Sub in whatever device, whatever media, whatever means of distraction comes with a life of plenty, but you can see the progression, right? Typically, we focus on the characters of the wicked, the sinners, and the mockers. But when we watch the verbs, the psalmist is illustrating how one slowly forgets the path of the Lord. We're walking in a seemingly good direction, and then we get distracted. And we stop walking and stand with the distraction. And then we sit with it, and we plant our roots. It's rarely intentional. We don't wake up one morning and say, I want to forget God today. But it's not uncommon that we just get stuck in the muck of whatever pleasant diversion has captured us, and we lose sight of the real life. Did you know the real danger of leprosy is the damage that it does to the nerve endings? Lepers lose the ability to feel pain, which some of you might be thinking, that sounds kind of nice. But Dr. Paul Brand, who worked with lepers for nearly 2 decades, he explained that such a diagnosis is deadly because someone with leprosy could get a small wound or a splinter and have no idea. So then left untreated, these minor injuries would get infected and lead to the loss of a limb or even death. Living in a land of plenty isn't bad, but it's dangerous. It's dangerous because it's hard to know how to have an appropriate relationship with plenty. It's hard to know when plenty is beneficial versus detrimental. It's hard to know when plenty is distracting us more than it's helping us. It's hard to know if we're so overstimulated by the plenty that we've lost the ability to feel the wounds that are killing us. I think our plenty has numbed us. I think we might have leprosy. When an Israelite had leprosy, they'd be examined by a priest and they'd be sent outside the camp alone. Outside the camp is where the ashes from different sacrifices would be taken, and then other sacrifices would be taken outside the camp to be burned on this ash heap. The ashes of Nadab and Abihu who were killed for violating God's sacrificial laws, those ashes were taken outside the camp. If someone was to be stoned to death, it happened outside the camp. Being outside the camp wasn't a good thing. You were deprived of the normal, good life. Inside the camp, you had a home, you had food, you had family and friends, you had plenty. Outside the camp, you were poor and destitute. On a larger scale, I think Israel's exodus and Exodus wanderings were a bit of an outside the camp experience. They were homeless, they couldn't farm the ground or plant gardens, and neighboring nations didn't want them around. And even though they were free from their captivity in Egypt, a month of being outside the camp and they began to complain. They said, "If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt. There we sat around pots filled with meat and ate all the bread we wanted, but now we've been brought into this wilderness to starve to death." Despite the abuse, in Egypt, they had plenty. Now they had nothing. Apparently, enough plenty can numb even the pain of bondage. But enough hunger can reveal where your heart truly lies. Israel was free, but they weren't comfortable. And when confronted with the discomfort of the wilderness, they admitted that their hearts desired plenty more than they desired freedom. They were okay settling for distraction over deliverance. But that's how amusement works, right? It doesn't actually have to be that great. We can even admit that it probably isn't a healthy dependency, but as long as it distracts us from the wounds that living brings, it's done its job and we'll keep coming back. That's why Isaiah can say, "They honor God with their lips, but their hearts are far from me." Remembering God amidst the plenty isn't a mental challenge. It's a heart challenge. In the First Testament text that's typically assigned to Ash Wednesday, the prophet Joel writes, "Turn to me while there's still time. Give me your hearts." It's not the plenty that's necessarily bad, though some of it could be. The danger is that when our hearts are so enchanted or amused that we don't realize when we're giving them away. Joel continues, "Come with fasting, weeping, mourning. Don't tear your clothing in your grief, but tear your hearts instead." I used to think that the ripping of your hearts was something that you would do in mourning. But the older I get, the more I realize, I think he's actually saying, rip your hearts back from the things that you've given them to. Fight, claw, seize your heart from all the things you thought brought you life and give it to me. Yahweh led you through the wilderness. When you were hungry, he fed you with bread from heaven. And when you were thirsty, he gave you water from a rock. So as the psalmist said, plant your roots next to the river of God and meditate on his wisdom, because true life doesn't come from the plenty or the comfort or the distractions. True life comes from God. I think the leper in the Gospels figured this out. We don't know how long he'd been numb. We don't know how long he'd been outside the camp. But something must have happened in the wilderness, because when he comes to Jesus, he doesn't actually ask to be healed. He doesn't ask for Jesus to fix the situation so he can return to the life of plenty. What Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record is a statement of faith. If you are willing, you could heal me. He figured out the source. Through a time of radical understimulation outside the camp, he became confident in the abundant life of God manifested in Jesus Christ. He discovered that with or without plenty, there was no true life outside of God. And though he didn't ask to be healed, his statement indicates that he knows this is a possibility. But you realize what this means, right? For the leper to be healed is for him to feel pain again. He will feel the wounds he bears. He will sense when things are sore and broken, but he will be free to mend those wounds and the wounds of others. Mark is the only gospel writer that includes that Jesus felt compassion, which I think creates this fascinating image of what it means to be alive and what it means to be dead. The leper is broken with a disease that makes him unable to feel any sort of real life. Jesus is abundant life, and he is broken with feeling. Moved with compassion, Mark said, Jesus reached out and touched him. I am willing. Be healed. Feel pain again. Feel the fullness of life again. Feel compassion for all that is broken. This is what Israel never got. It's what we still struggle to understand. When Moses is warning Israel to not be amused by their plenty, he ends by saying, Yahweh, not your plenty, is the one who gives you the strength to be successful in order to fulfill the covenant. You know this covenant, the one God made with Abraham, that he would bless Abraham, that he would give him plenty, but that God would also bless the world through him. Any blessing Israel ever received was a blessing to be passed through them to others. This is why trees planted along the river of God bear fruit in every season with leaves that never wither. This abundance, having more than enough, is not so Israel could be amused by it, but so that in their compassion, they could share their blessing with the world, so that everyone might know that Yahweh is the true source of abundant life. In Lent, God invites us to step away from the plenty through fasting, to be understimulated, to be hungry, so that we might see the leprosy in our own hearts and return to him as the true source of life, so that we might be a means of his life to the world. So what do you run to numb the pain? What do you let distract you from the brokenness of this world? What makes you comfortable? Perhaps in this season, God is inviting you to fast from one of those things so that you might discover wounds you didn't even know you had, so that he can heal them and teach you to feel compassion again, which we only learn by following him. And where does he go? To the cross, outside the camp. The writer of Hebrews says, he suffered outside the city gate to make the people holy, to sanctify them, to cleanse them, to heal them with his own blood. So now let us go to him outside the camp, bearing his shame. We have no city that will last, but we keep looking for the one to come. And so to start this season of fasting, we'll receive ashes on our foreheads, a mark of living outside the camp, a mark that explicitly acknowledges that our humanity is plagued with a disease that slowly destroys our ability to love others, a disease that will lead to death. You'll hear the ashers say, "From dust you came, to dust you will return." No numbing or distraction will change this reality. But as much as these ashes are a statement of our condition, they are also a statement of faith. They're done in the shape of a cross because we know the source of life. We know if he's willing, he can heal us. We know that he is the resurrection and the life. So if he's willing, we can live even though we die. Sisters and brothers, he is willing. Be healed.